Welcome back to Head Games on Sirius Satellite Sports Violin with Rick Bucher. Rick, so now you've got the young one in the house. So you're juggling being Mr. Mom and Mr.
Right.
Swimming Coach with being a world-class NBA and sports journalist in general. Before we go back to the NBA, Rick, tell me about what excites you about being a writer in terms of covering things that aren't normally covered in sports. What are the things that you believe are not covered enough?
Wow. For me, just in sort of a general sense, I don't know that fans understand the human aspect of being a professional athlete. There's a conception out there or a perception that if you're a marvelous athlete, if you have marvelous physical gifts and you make a ton of money and you have all the fame that comes with being a professional player, that somehow you become exempt to the human issues. And it's just not the case. And so I always feel that one of my objectives is to make people understand how that guy on the field or on the court is really deals with all the same issues you do, except they may actually, rather than be alleviated, they're actually heightened by the pressures and circumstance of being a professional athlete. And in doing that, I believe there's the big link for me that's been lost in professional sports in general is the disconnect between athletes and fans, that there's been a separation. And I guess I look at part of my responsibility as trying to reconnect them and make them understand how they're really not that different.
You know, we didn't rehearse this, but it's so interesting. The last part of our show yesterday, we had Morton Anderson talk about Michael Vick and the public versus private persona, and how Morton learned brilliantly, frankly, in the last 10 years of his career, how he had to truly separate his public from his private life. He reduced to some degree all of the different things he did in the community. He still does things, but he understands that he has to have that separation. We had Dr. Stephen Solomon, who's written a book on relationships, on the show yesterday, talking about how difficult that is to have that public versus private life. Here's Steve Solomon.
Well, the book really came, you know, I'm in private practice here in La Jolla, and my professional partner and I, over the last 10, 15 years, just seen so many couples come in where there'd been an infidelity, and they wanted to see if they could heal that wound and build a stronger relationship because they still loved each other. And so it was really about trying to help people not take what oftentimes is the easier road, which is just to run away, you know, when the going gets tough, and do the hard work necessary to live up to the commitment they made to each other when they got married, which was through thick and thin to hang in there and try and make it work out. So,
what I try to do in that show, and we'll get back to that, is that the marriage a player has to his team is often filled with another level, if you will, of infidelity, that you have to deal with the fact that players come and go 20 to 30% every year, and how do you not project that out into your relationships? Likewise, the coach has to figure out a way to make his players understand that he is loyal to them, that he is worth trusting. What do you think about that?
No question. I mean, it is a tricky road because, let's never forget, it's a business. But to have a successful team, you have to have the sense that it's a family. And that's the biggest challenge on both sides of the equation between players and coaches, is to understand it's a business. I need you to emotionally come together and trust each other and believe in each other, knowing at the same time that any one of us could be gone because of a business decision elsewhere. And I've always felt that if you were going to be a successful coach, you need to find, aside from the X's and O's, basically everybody knows the X's and O's. The key is getting guys to buy into the idea that they're not just playing for money. They're not just playing for fame. They're not just playing for personal statistics. That everybody in the league gets that. We want to play for something higher than that. We want to play for something that is going to last beyond the money and beyond all of that, and that is our relationship with each other and achieving something collectively that we could never do individually. And being able to to keep guys, keep that in the forefront of everybody's mind as you go forward day by day through a season, to me is really the trick of how you end up building a championship team.
You know, Red Auerbach's passing brings that up, because look at what he was able to do, in addition, of course, to bringing in the black athlete at a whole new level and establishing a legitimacy and a normalcy for the black athlete in the NBA and in major sports, in some ways at a new level than even Jackie Robinson did, really taking it to a normalcy that had not occurred before. We're joined by Seth Joyner, who's looked at coaches and experienced different coaching styles from the good and the bad and sometimes the ugly. Seth, how are you?
Doing good, Nick. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. You know, Seth, I wanted to ask you, with Rick Bucher here talking about the NBA, you know what it's like when you've got a coach that you just don't trust. I'm thinking about coaches that have that magic where you do want to sacrifice. A guy like Mike D'Antoni is one of them. A guy like Pat Riley clearly is one of them. Phil Jackson is one of them. In the NFL, who would you liken to those coaches? What is the secret, in your mind, to building that trust in literally in a matter of weeks?
Well, I think nowadays a guy like Bill Parcells is a guy like that. Marvin Lewis is a guy like that. Obviously, Marty Schottenheimer's been doing it a long time. I think, you know, it's a relationship that's formed between players and coaches that really brings that about. And the biggest thing is that, you know, the players buy into what it is the coach is selling. The coach has got to have some type of believability about him, or he's got to have some type of credibility about him to get particularly the older players on the team to buy into that whole thing. And then, you know, a lot of times it's just being able to see that he's had some success down the road and that he knows what the heck he's talking about to get guys, you know, to buy into it. But it is a difficult proposition, you know, because as a young player, you really don't understand all that's involved. You just want to be a player. You just want to make your money, you know. But as you get older, you start to understand when the championship is really all about, and you also understand what it takes and what's needed and what's required by every player, every role player, every coach that's involved in order for you to get there.
Rick, let's get back to the NBA and how that applies in the NBA these days. Yep. Because players have changed. The culture's changed. It's a younger NBA. It's even more commercial than ever. The NFL is more commercial than ever. Both leagues have their own television networks. Seth knows all about that. The cult of personality, if you will, has become more important as well. Let's look at some of the teams that are doing well so far, like the Mavericks right now, and maybe the Warriors as well.
Yeah, well, in both of those cases, you have coaches with different styles. In the case of Avery Johnson with the Mavericks, those guys believe in him because he's got a ring on his finger. And I think this points to what Seth was saying. You need two things to believe in a coach. You have to believe that he can make you better, and you have to believe that he can get you where you want to go, and that he knows more, as much or more about the game than you do. And that's, I see it all the time with coaches who, they go out there. The example of Mike Montgomery preceding Don Nelson with the Golden State Warriors. Mike Montgomery came out of college. He was in college for 25 years, and he tried to get up to speed with the NBA. Well, the first time he mismanages the clock or he runs a play where Baron Davis says, "Man, that doesn't work on this level," he's lost that faith, and you can't get it back. Don Nelson, meanwhile, comes in, and he's suddenly using guys in ways that they've never seen before, and they feel like they're being put in a position to succeed. They're going to eat that up. They're going to play that much harder for him. And that is the distinction. And it sounds simple, but it is not an easy thing to do. The line you walk as a coach, you can't make too many mistakes where you expose that you might know less than the guys that you're coaching. And in a lot of situations, you're coaching guys who have had more experience in the league doing what they do than you do. So you got to find a way to get up to speed and be able to add something to their knowledge that maybe they didn't know before.
Let's look at Utah for our final analysis of this segment, which is a team that has surged with a whole lot of new people. Tell us about Utah.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Utah, and it's a reflection a little bit of Jerry Sloan and his ability. Everybody thought that, you know, once Stockton and Malone left, that that was the heart of his ability. And certainly you need talent. But they've gone from being more of a half-court team to an up-tempo team. And they've recognized that there's been a sea change in the way this game is played. It might still be defense wins championships in the NFL, but the NBA has shifted. You can have a so-so defense and win a championship, but you have got to have a very good offense to make it happen. The Miami Heat demonstrated that last year. The Mavericks demonstrated it by getting to the finals. And the Utah Jazz have gone the same way. If you look at the type of players they have, they're not quote-unquote Jerry Sloan-type players. He's got more finesse players than he's ever had, and yet he's finding a way to make it work.
Rick, we just got 30 seconds, but any article that we can look for in ESPN, the magazine coming up that you're working on?
Dwight Howard should be in the next issue. You can read all about the man-child is ready to take over the league and how he may make Orlando finally forget about Shaquille O'Neal.
Hey, Rick, thanks so much. Speaking of man and child, you go back to those swimming lessons with your young man. Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
You got it, Nick.
That's Rick Bucher from ESPN, one of the great writers. Check out ESPN, the magazine. When we come back, Seth Joyner and I are going to do a little NFL now. We're going to talk about Tony Romo and the cult of the mobile quarterback. Myth, legend, or truth? We'll be right back on Sports Byline and Sirius Satellite.